Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to another lockdown episode of Hip Hop Saved My Life. We are delighted to be joined by, Rue Madge is here.
I'm delighted
that you're here. I didn't mean it like that. I'm obviously delighted that you're here. We are delighted.
Still in lockdown.
But it's still a lockdown, yeah. You're still around your friend's house?
Yeah, still sort of got used to it though now.
Are you disinfecting every time you leave?
I just wash my hands, but not what's disinfecting?
Well, it's just that I assume you're touching loads of surfaces around that property.
No, not intentionally.
No, I know you're not. I'm not suggesting that you're rubbing yourself deliberately on the stuff, but you are going to touch stuff as you make your way through that flat, right?
That is true, yeah.
And so are you conscious of the fact that you need to sort of undo that, like de-magendi that, those surfaces?
When I get back to my house?
No, for the benefits of your friends, whose flat that is.
Maybe, yeah, but they're not going to be back for quite a while.
Okay,
so.
Fine. Yeah, so might as well let it all sink in before you have to do a proper deep clean, which you won't bother doing at the last minute because you'll say you've run out of time. Now, we are joined by someone who I reckon we've been talking about getting on the podcast for, I don't think an exaggeration to say, about 3 years. So
since the beginning,
yeah. I think so. So finally, he's actually deigned to appear on the fucking thing. Please give it up for Reece James. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. Thank you very much. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure now. This is 3 years in the making, so I've had 3 years to think about this.
Yeah.
What do I like about him? Yeah.
You've had the questions for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, so these things take time. Sometimes it takes a global pandemic for us to finally match up our schedules we're all doing nothing. Although, actually, you're the busiest I've ever seen anyone be. And despite the fact that you're stuck in your house, I mean, every day it's you've got a new thing coming out, whether it's like a TV show, hosting an existing TV show, an Instagram Live, I mean, Facebook.
Yeah.
How are you so busy? Do you hate your kids? I know you've publicly said you hate your kids, but I thought it was an act. You finally got an opportunity to spend a bit of time, and I've never seen someone so present on social media and TV.
To be honest with you, I had been doing loads of Facebook Lives. In fact, I went through a phase of doing them every day, and then I realised that was absolute insanity because of the time commitment, and two, because the quality of what I was doing was so poor.
What have you possibly got to update anyone on after?
I know, mate, 100%, man. And I'd go on there and talk. Basically, all I would do is, honestly, this is what it descended to eventually, is I'd go on there and just have a go at anybody making negative comments about it being boring. That's essentially what the whole Facebook Live would be. Yeah, be saying, okay, so this is me on here today. Well, fuck you, Paul Smith. I'm doing something for free. So if you don't like it, you can log off. Huh? What do you expect?
That was the way you were sort of switching off, I guess, and de-stressing.
Do you know, I have actually, speaking of the kids, because the kids have been playing Fortnite non-stop and they've properly got into it now. And I feel sorry for any genuine adults that got into Fortnite in the beginning, because as far as I can tell, it's a fucking primary school now, because it all seems to be kids, all my kids and their mates have just taken this thing over and they're just constantly... I heard my five-year-old say, I just got a headshot with an AR the other day. So I've got a five-year-old kid talking about assault rifle. But anyway, I've started playing Fortnite. I've like downloaded it and I've joined in with them. If you want to add me, my nickname on it is Daddy Badman. and I join in with them on little like campaign stuff. That's my way of kind of compensating for the fact that I'm doing all this
and
live.
When you, when you kill someone on Fortnite, are you imagining that it's a Facebook Live commenter? You're going, Paul Smith, you fucking shit. Who's boring now?
Daddy Badman sounds like a sort of name they'd give a an online paedophile.
Yeah,
sort of
I realised that actually that name is so heavily dependent on the emphasis of the syllables in that, in terms of how it sounds. Because you could have Daddy Badman, which sounds pretty cool, but you could have Daddy Badman. that immediately changes it, yeah. But have you what about you, Reese? How you find it? Because I don't think people are sort of quite talking like this now, but at the beginning everybody was getting into philosophical discussions about what does this mean for comedians and shit like that. Did you go through a similar kind of crisis?
Not really, because I hate gigging. I hate being a comedian. So actually, dream come true. I actually realised, genuinely, about a year ago, I realised when I was writing a new show that the days I was happiest, the only days I was happy were the days when all I had to do that day was write and I didn't have to do a gig. And that's a scary thought as a comedian, because you realise, oh, I should obviously just be a writer. Yeah. I mean, this is fucking stupid. But then I was on tour, so I was writing a tour show, which I do like doing. But then as soon as it was like, by the way, everything's cancelled, I was a bit like, oh, thank fuck for that. Great. I think I thought, you know, this isn't that serious and, you know, it's cancelled, but only for a bit. And it's like a little break. But no, obviously now it's got to a point where it's like, oh, right, everyone I come into contact with is finding me an absolute fucking nightmare as I, you know, dance for them and do anything to get their attention. So what I'm finding is I've become in lockdown addicted to gambling. All I do is play poker now. Not against the public, but against friends, other comedians. Sometimes there's a comedian. The other day we played, and I didn't know that you could get so drunk in your own house that you'd have a 2-day hangover. But that is what happened. This is day three. I've just recovered. So I've had a 2-day hangover the last 2 days because I got so pissed. And the problem is that when you're in your house and you're drinking, there's no financial aspect that stops you or makes you realise quite how much you're drinking. There's no process of getting up to go to the bar. I just had a bottle of whiskey next to me. So, yeah, it's going well, actually. So basically, you just fill that up. It's no different. It's just a tap, isn't it? So you just go, you don't notice how much you've drunk. So I was so drunk from that I was sick. That evening, and then
fucking hell,
yeah slept on the sofa. This is in my own fucking house. It's mental. The next morning, woke up, was sick again, had an Alka-Seltzer to settle the stomach, threw that up pretty immediately. And then luckily, here's how pathetic I am as a man who's almost 30. I had to recover. There's no real Deliveroos that would help me. Luckily, 2 days earlier, I had gone out to buy a box of chicken dippers because I saw some chicken dippers in Rick Edwards' Instagram story. And I'm just so easily led. I was like, yeah, great. I'm going to go get some chicken dippers. And then I had them in the house. And I nearly messaged Rick Edwards to say, cheers, mate. You really helped me. Really helped me through over there.
Yeah, I find that drinking alone, getting drunk alone, because I did, I've done it a couple of times, but I found the last time I did it, I was getting worried about drinking too much. And all I had to do to take myself out of it is to imagine what the scene would look like from somebody just watching me. And it was just like, you know, so somebody with headphones on, just sort of talking to a screen, just like pouring more and more stuff and then knocking it back. It just felt so fucking bleak, it immediately sort of took me out of the immersion.
It's great that you're on TV so much that at all times you have to consider if someone is currently watching you.
Yeah. Although I would say that hasn't stopped me making some poor decisions in the past, really. But you know what you're going to do.
Here's a little bit that you like to pull. How did you get into hip hop?
So, Reese, you're a hip hop fan.
Oh, yeah.
We should talk hip hop. What was your early kind of, how did you get into it, I guess is the question that I've asked every time and have somehow managed to waffle it.
What episode is this? What number episode is this? 200? It's three. If I've been waiting 3 years, you had 3 years to prepare that opening question.
do you want to try it again?
Sure. Okay. Reese, hip hop, into it. How did you get?
Oh, there we go. That's Yoda. Nice. DJ Yoda. it's a tale as old as time, really. So like any sort of middle-class white man from the home counties, Eminem. So basically, my brother, when he was 12, he's 3 years older than me, my brother. When he was 12, he was bought the Marshall Mathers LP by my parents' best friends for his birthday, which is quite a strange gift for some adults to buy a 12-year-old, given it's a very violent album.
That is so weird.
Such a violent album, the Marshall Mathers LP. You might see me jogging, you might see me walking. You might see me walking a dead rat while a dog with his head chopped off in the park with a spike collar, hollering at him because the son of a bitch won't quit barking. Or leaning out a window with a cocked shotgun, driving up the block in the car that they shot Pac in, looking for pigs, killers, dressing ridiculous, blue and red, like I don't see what the big deal is. Double barrel 12Ks bigger than Chris. He would just listen to that all the time, and then like, so when we would just play FIFA or something, and then just like that album would just be on. And basically, that's it. I just got into it because of that. And then he was really into it more than me. So he had like the Black Album and he was listening to Nas, and he was really into 50 Cent as well. I never really got into that. But it just, those things would just be on all the time. And then I just remember just kind of vicariously getting into it and just like learning lyrics, all the lyrics of the Marshall Mathers LP, which, you know, as an 8 year old, wasn't massively appropriate. You know, just walking around my house singing.
Fucking hell, you were
New
eight.
Kids on the Block, so suck young. A lot of yeah. dick. Boy groups make me sick as an 8 year old. Yeah, not knowing what that means. Yeah, took a New Kids on the Block, sucked a lot of dick. Boy girl groups make me sick. And I can't wait till I catch all you faggots in public. I'ma love it. Vanilla Ice don't like. You know, my parents didn't really seem to give a shit about that. So, it was just that. It was the Marshall Mathers LP was the first thing. The first thing I bought myself, I think, was Speakerbox/The Love Below, the 39 track Outkast double album.
It's a great album.
I don't know if I agree with that. There's good bits, but it's basically just a 39 track album that's based on the success of Hey Ya and Maybe Roses.
Yes.
And then it's like, well, you don't need 37 other songs.
No.
And it's certainly like, I get the concept of it, like breaking it up. So what, you know, Andre 3000 had his own album. Big Boy had his own album. But it was so confusing as a child to try and understand. Like, I hadn't even really heard albums yet. So a concept album wasn't necessary at this stage. I'm still just getting into the idea of there being more than one song. So it was a bit pointless. But I don't know. It's considered a great album, isn't it, that?
Well, I don't... Well... Look, I don't, it's sort of a weird one, isn't it? Because it's sort of, it is a concept album in terms of, if the concept is the band don't really want to be together anymore, but they still have to put out an album. It's so weird. You've essentially got a Big Boy album and an Andre album, and they've just stuck them together to, I don't know, to just maximise the revenues or something. I don't know, because like, it's weird, because you're right, Andre, because you know, obviously I'm much older than you, but like when that album came out, it actually frustrated me that Hey Ya and Roses were the ones that like really blew up off that album, because I do love, obviously Andre's amazing, but Big Boy is incredible, and his album Speakerbox was kind of the one that I immediately gravitated to out of the two albums. You know, it's got I think it's got B.O.B. on it, hasn't it?
Yeah. Microphone like that, there, but we still stay free. Big things happen every time we meet, like a track team crashing down the geek. Outcasts bumping up and down the street, slam back, Cadillac, by five niggas, 75 MCs, freestyle to the beat, cause we get crossed, stay drunk at the club. Should've bought an ounce, but you caught the dub. Should've held back, but you told the punch. Supposed to meet you good, but you packed the lunch. No G to the U to the G for you. Got a son on the way by the name of Bamboo. Got a little baby girl, 4 year Jordan. Never turn my back on my kids for them. Should've hit it.
Like, it's got proper hip hop tunes on it, and so I really loved it. And so then Andre's stuff, like, I mean, that's when, to be honest with you, when my wife started, like, when Lisa says that she likes Hey Ya, that's when I know that my love affair with the group is coming to an end, because...
Well, that's it. Like, I was a kid, so it's like, I think I would have... Yeah. Hey Ya's like my way to dip a toe as a kid. Like, the more heavy hip-hop stuff, I would have probably been a bit frightened by. But even though I was singing along to Eminem by then, but it was like Hey Ya and Roses were like probably the biggest songs at school. They're probably the only things anyone cared about at school. And actually, I remember in Roses, it was definitely a talking point. It's like they designed it for schools, because there was the big talking point of what he says roses really smell like.
Right? I know.
And that was a big debate. And I, so on brand, I remember I used to I had this really flirty argument at school with this girl that I really fancied called Alicia. And it was this really flirty argument about, oh, he's saying roses smell like poo. And then I was like, no, trust me, he's saying they smell like boo. Okay. And then she was like, no, it's poo. Obviously it's poo because boo isn't a smell. And I was like, yeah, but I've got the album. And in the little lyric booklet that comes at the front of the album, it says boo. And it was just like a little bit of fun. And it was quite nice. And we were getting on really well for like the last month or so, me and this girl I really fancied. And then I obviously, like everything, took that too far and came into school the next day with the lyric booklet and said,
no,
actually, that it says boo. And then she was just kind of like, oh yeah, okay. It's just a chat. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then that was the end of my my brief mental fling with.
So there was no point at which you thought, well, this is something we're having an ongoing discussion about. Maybe I shouldn't bring the thing that will automatically bring that discussion to a complete and utter end.
Yeah, keep the plate spinning. No, I just went, no. These plates, it's dangerous to spin these plates. Let's put them down and prove I'm right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was right.
But... Actually, Alicia, you're wrong, okay?
That, I mean, that is my personality. So it's good to know. Like, I had, when thinking about these albums, I had that memory and then was like, oh, fuck, I've always been like that. I haven't, sometimes you're like, have I just developed this because I'm a comedian? And have I now let the comedian me become me? And has that ruined my life? Mm. And it's just sort of like a constant internal question. And then you go, no, you were doing that at 12 before you even thought about comedy.
It's a weird one because, like, people go, that whole thing about comedian versus what you're really like and how you are on stage and shit like that. And I remember when I started doing stand-up, people would go, are you that grumpy in real life? And then the truth is I've kind of become less... I've become more like myself off stage, on stage, than I used to be, right? Mm. When I started, I was like... But now I think to myself, I think I always was a grumpy prick, but I was just put the filters on because you can't be like that in society. You can't have friends if you tell people how you really think about what they've just said and blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean? You have to hide that because otherwise nobody will want to hang out with you.
Yeah, we all want to be Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. We all want to be saying, no, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to go. And we all want to be saying, what you've just done is mad. But the only person who can actually be like that in real life is Larry David, because everyone goes, oh, Larry, you're just doing the thing from the show.
Yeah.
What he's done is very cleverly make a TV show that means he can now be the person that we all want to be.
I know.
And now that he's done it, none of us can do it. Not that we would have created Curb Your Enthusiasm, but...
Give it a whirl.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess because your style of stand-up is, you're telling jokes. I mean, I know all comedians are telling jokes, but there's a slight detachment between your beliefs and the way that you present your jokes, I guess. I know you're talking about it autobiographically, but have you ever got yourself into shit for, have people ever got offended, people in your life, or about what you've talked about on stage?
I don't know if it's about on stage, but definitely on Twitter, yeah. And I've had to go, like, the amount of times I have to say to someone, so sorry, you see people who come up all the time in your notifications as people who often retweet or like your jokes. And then they'll find one that you do and they'll react to it like it's a statement rather than a joke. You go, sorry, you spent 2 years retweeting these because you know they're jokes. And then you're picking that one, are you? To go, oh, he means that. It's like the amount of times I have to go, it's not real. So... None of this is real. I don't have any opinions. None of these are thoughts. They're just little gags that I thought would be funny. But the problem is that, on stage, I don't really get in trouble because you can do a persona. So it's obvious you're doing it from a place of irony or detachment. But on Twitter, people just... Also, then you get all the people that don't follow you suddenly going, what? Who's this? Who thinks that? And then you just go, ugh. And they're not even... these are not offensive jokes. They're just stupid. I keep claiming at the moment on Twitter to be a billionaire because everyone's really angry about billionaires. So I keep saying, sorry guys, I'm just going to take some time off. I've seen that there's a bit of backlash to billionaires, so I'm just going to take a back seat on Twitter for a little bit. I don't want to get any heat. And then every now and then you just get someone who doesn't follow you going, what? Give some money to the NHS. And also, because if you Google anyone net worth, so if you Google Rhys James net worth, it does say that I'm worth like $150 million.
Right.
So like if you just saw that tweet without context and then you Googled that, you would think, oh, he is just bragging about being rich. But
yeah, what an arsehole.
Both of those things aren't true. I mean, I am rich. I'm incredibly
well. No, of course, as well you deserve to be. Yeah. But But you must get this more than I do. But this thing where you tweet a joke or an idea, and then people reply trying to top it, or they've missed the joke or whatever, and they try and be funny off the back of it. Whenever people do that, they almost, I mean, a lot of the time, they put like a laughing face emoji afterwards, and or, you know, crying with laughter emoji or whatever. And I always think, oh, you're a cunt. I always think that people that do that, I hate it. And then I think to myself, well, at least you know they're joking. Because the number of times that I've done tweets where I have clearly been, well, to my mind, I've clearly been joking. And then people have just taken that, and you think to yourself, oh, actually, maybe I should have put a lot of laughing face emoji. Can you imagine if you just got reduced to the stage where you had to put that after every one of your little,
just put
your
every
little
tweet,
funny tweets?
Every tweet says, just joking at the end of it. Every comedian tweet, just joking. Maybe we should become
becomes
that.
A law.
Maybe we should do that. Maybe, or maybe instead of a blue tick, if you're a comedian and you commit to every tweet I'm going to do is a joke, you have a little laughing emoji next to your name. So that it just verifies this account is joking. That's what they need to do. I'm going to get in touch with Jack Dorsey and try and set that up.
Oh, God, it's so awful, isn't it?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, so Outkast, and then what did you move into after that?
Well, it was at the era when I was a teenager, the sort of the popular music, the thing all the popular kids at school were listening to was kind of more R&B. Like that was like the big, like Nelly and stuff like that were like the big things. Mm. And then like Usher, I remember Confessions being like one of the first albums I knew all the words to. Well, it's not really hip hop, is it? But like, yeah. I don't know, just people were massively into those sorts of things. And like Mario and even like Wayne Wonder were like the big artists of the time.
Yeah, I went to see Usher when he was touring that Confessions album. Well, I think it might have been 8701. I can't remember one of those albums. And going to a gig like that, as a bloke, I think is unacceptable. I just...
Were you outnumbered women to men there, was it?
Well, I mean, being outnumbered by women isn't an issue as such. It's just sort of the fact that he would come out and, you know, he'd grab the mic and he'd just go, so good to be in London. And then...
Yeah.
1,000 women around you would just fucking ejaculate. It was just insane.
He wore a vest at the start and then topless and wet by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. And he did this thing where partway through the gig he came out on a bed like Theophilus P. Wildebeest.
it's like
it was just sort of...
those R&B artists, like it was such a... It was so weird that as 14, 15-year-olds we were also into it, given that it's such a sexual genre of music. I mean, I do understand that the time period in your life is like you're discovering stuff, you know, or you're like cock-blocking yourself with lyric booklets. But like the fact that we're listening to even like, I don't want to bring it up, but R. Kelly was like probably the biggest artist of that era. And it's like the most sexual music imaginable and turns out in all sorts of ways. But it was like, that was what I was into at the time. And then I was also really into garage. Like, I know you don't look at me and necessarily think, oh, here's a big garage kid. But I was so into like Shanks and Bigfoot. That was the first single I ever bought. Sweet Like Chocolate Boy.
Fuck me. I don't even think I've heard those words.
Shanks and Bigfoot. Massively in Shanks and Bigfoot. DJ Luck and MC Neat, Artful Dodger, Craig David, like big fans of all that. And then I remember getting really into Roll Deep. Do you remember them? Roll Deep. That like grime.
Yeah, of course, man.
Pop grime collective. Yeah. I heard of them because of Showboat on Soccer AM. I discovered Roll Deep. Mm. And then I bought that first album, and I remember just being obsessed with that album. And then got into like slightly better stuff, like Kano's album Home Sweet Home was a big thing when I was that age, and then like the streets, and it was like so I did that, and then it was I remember being very excited by, so I was always into like all the popular kids basically were into R&B and then like kind of rap and hip-hop a little bit, and then like there's like another subsection of friends I had that were, I was sort of always into sort of like rock and indie type stuff as well, and I was really into nu metal. So basically when Jay-Z and Linkin Park joined up for that album, it was like the meeting of my two sides of my personality that I'd been hiding from other groups. Who you know fresher than whole, riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. Yeah, hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm young H.O., rap's grateful dead. Back to take over the globe, now break bread. I'm in Boeing jets, Global Express. Out the country, but the blueberries still connect. On the low, but the yacht. And I sort of used it as a way to be, give an inspirational speech. I sort of was like, look, if these two world-famous things on opposite sides can come together, why can't we? There's no boundaries here. Just because you like Nelly and you like Limp Bizkit doesn't mean that we can't come together and all be friends. And then it sort of became clear to me, no, it's because some people play football and some people don't. That's why these friendships, it's not got nothing to do with music. Some people are fit and some people aren't. That's literally it. But I definitely remember, I think I did actually pitch to like one of my mates, like, look, let's just all be mates. And everyone's like, fuck off, mate. You're barely in this group. I wouldn't push your luck. I fucking love that album so much. I thought that album was just the most mind-blowing thing. I've not listened back to it.
I don't think I really... Because I wasn't a Linkin Park fan particularly. But, like, I don't think I even... Did you listen to it, Rupert, that album when it came out?
What was the big single off it? Was it Hardcore? Or what?
Encore.
Numb Encore, yeah.
That I repeatedly listened to, but... Didn't get in with the album.
I just, because I was never really, I never really, this is sort of sacrilegious to say, but I never really got into Jay-Z that much compared to other hip hop artists I was into. I never really found Jay-Z. To me, Jay-Z's always felt like the mayor of hip hop. Like he's sort of like this weirdly acceptable political face of it, where it's like, I don't know, he just feels like he's constantly shaking hands with hip-hop fans in a sort of just like, he's kissing hip-hop babies, is if we want to stretch the metaphor. I don't know why he's just like, he probably isn't, and I'm probably completely wrong, but it's always felt too, so if I'm going to listen to hip-hop, let's listen to some fucking maniac. Jay-Z's always just felt
I know what you mean.
I'm rapping.
Yeah.
I think that's probably so disrespectful to one of the greats, so I apologise, especially given that he's in that relationship with Beyonce. Like they're like this power couple. They're just like the Barack and Michelle Obama of hip hop.
Yeah.
I know until Beyonce released Lemonade that revealed all the issues with that, I would always have just seen it as this perfect, flawless, like they're like this too clean cut. They're just like, they're almost like factory made hip hop artists. But I do like their music, but I just always saw them as that in this public persona. And then she released the album and the whole thing changed and it was like, oh, right, okay. This is actually fucked.
It was weird that, wasn't it? Because like they were like Brand Beckham,
yes,
weren't they?
That's
in terms
what I mean.
Of this
idyllic
couple that, and it felt like they were supercharging each other. Do you know what I mean? The top artists in hip hop and the top artists in R&B are a couple, and isn't it amazing? And then, like, you know, obviously, I'm not going to make any allegations against David Beckham with regards to his marriage, but you know, that it feels like they are very much let's keep this together and we're a family and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, that's the
brand, though, isn't it?
It's, yeah,
sort of keeping the brand together is the motivation.
Exactly, so, but that's why it seems so mad that Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, I don't know what the road was to them making that decision. But for Jay-Z and Beyonce, or for Beyonce rather, to put out a record where Jay-Z is made to look like such a fucking arsehole, and rightly so, based on, you know, his behaviour. I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve that. But, you know, you would sort of expect them to just go, let's fucking hide all this. I mean, we need to, Jesus Christ, this is going to damage the brand. We need to squirrel this away somewhere and make sure nobody ever hears about this. Not make the seminal R&B record of the year about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was...
Can you imagine?
That was crazy.
I mean, it's almost a shame, now you mention that we never saw Victoria Beckham come back to her music career to release an album about David Beckham and Rebecca Luce. That's what we need.
Can you imagine?
That's what the Spice Girls reunion should have been. Who is it that she did that song with? Who? Dane Bowers.
Dane Bowers.
Imagine Dane Bowers on a seminal R&B record of the decade, the British Lemonade. Dane Bowers coming in with, yeah, David.
So what sort of stuff do you still listen to hip hop now, Rose?
Yeah. But it's very chilled. I listen to sort of like low key. I like sort of low key stuff. I really liked Tierra Whack's album, which is sort of like, you know, that Tierra Whack album. It's really short. All the tracks are really short. I think it's from 2018. It almost feels like a, you know, on Amazon, if you were to buy an album on Amazon, and why would you? But if you were, you could get a 40-second sample of every song. That Tierra Whack album feels like the whole thing is that.
Were you actually? Yeah. Life is easy, I'm somebody hard to come across. Check the pH level and now I'm done with boss. Tip is darky right when I be still up become a boss. Send my cousin to the store to buy some fucking off. Bug it, my mosquitoes. Bug it, I don't need those. Love it, on my people's. Dollar signs, yeah, I need those. So I'll be coming. Hey, buddy. So I did not. Pick up. So I did to me. Pick up. Dollar signs, yeah, I need those. So I'll be coming.
But I got really into those and like low-key female sort of like hip-hop singers for a while. So I really liked that SZA album a couple of years ago.
Oh my God, mate.
That was amazing.
Control.
Yeah. I listened to that.
Jesus Christ.
I listened
that
to that so much.
Is unbelievable.
Why is it so hard to accept the party is over? You came with your new friends and her mom jeans and her new fans and she's perfect and I hate it. Oh, so glad you made it. I'm so glad you could come back. Somebody get the tacos. Somebody spark the blunt. Let's start the narcos off at episode one. Bring the gin, got the juice. Bring the sin, got that too. Won't you shut up? No, you're my favorite. Am I?
Yeah, love that.
Fucking hell, man.
Loved Kali Uchis' album as well. Thought that was fucking great. And then I really like, No Name as well, obviously, if we're going down that route. Both No Name's last two albums have been fucking amazing. And then I think that, do you know Saba? Have you heard Care For Me by Saba?
No.
You know that album? That's not a female singer, Saba. It's so fucking, I think it's the best album of 2018.
I got angels running away. I got demons hunting me. I know Pop with 25. I know Jesus 33. I tell death to keep a distance. I think he obsessed with me. I say God, that's the one. I know she would die for me. They want a barcode on my wrist.
I used to be in an album club WhatsApp group where it was like each week it's someone else's turn to suggest an album that they haven't heard either. No one heard.
Right.
And then we all just like listen to it three times in the week and then you just give it a little score at the end of the week or whatever. And at this was at the sort of at the start of that. And then I just went, what's come out this week? Oh, this album Saba, it's being hyped up. It's this rapper, I've never heard of him. And then I put that in the group and I think it smashed it and just got like tens from everyone. It's so good. It reminds me of when Kendrick did Good Kid, Mad City. Like the storytelling in that just blew everyone's mind. Saba, it's like the same sort of stuff. He's not as good a rapper as Kendrick, obviously, but like it's just so exciting as an album, Care For Me. And he's in a collective with No Name and like a bunch of other people now that are doing like this big, there's like 10 of them, and they were just before lockdown, they were going to doing these massive live shows together. But he's so far. I recommend that, definitely. And then other than that, it's like, I really like Loyal Karna. That album's fucking amazing. Love that. Flower Boy by Tyler, the Creator, I think is one of the best hip-hop albums. One of my favorite ones.
Who that boy? Who him is? Him that nigga, I swear. Stand out guy, him don't need no chair. Well, where the fuck him at? Cause nigga, I'm right here. I don't shop at the mall, all y'all just dumb motherfucker. I'm a goddamn artist. You can give me some markers and I draw you a closet. And you know that this garbage gonna make the deposit. Nigga fresh to death like he got dressed in a coffin. Cons overalls and a striped shirt. The boy drip swag like
I liked Igor, but not nearly as much.
Igor's one of those ones where like... everybody told you that you should really love it, right? And everybody was raving about it. And then I put it on and I listened to it the first time and I thought, okay, I would say this is borderline unlistenable in my opinion. But everybody's raving about it, so let me just give it another go. And then when people go to... You know when you sort of talk to certain people and they go, Igor is one of those albums where somebody goes, Igor's good, isn't it? And you go, really good, really different. And actually I'm thinking, I'm never going to listen to that fucking album.
No, it's weird. It's just... it's like... There's definitely good bits in it, but the Flower Boy to me was such a culmination of like so much of what Tyler the Creator had been representing in different albums for ages. It was like all like different tracks. He'd been like doing, oh, there's all this really aggressive stuff here. And like, I'm going really hard. And then it's like, oh, there's all this really offensive stuff here. I'm saying all this horrible images and like the video with the cockroach. And then saying, you'll find me in the attic looking at pictures of my dad's dick and all those sorts of like very, very childish
things. Relatable.
Yeah.
Relatable.
Exactly. Yeah. Tyler, some of us don't have an attic, okay? We have to look at pictures of my dad's dick in our kitchen. and then there was all the stuff like the sad boy rap that he was doing. And then Flower Boy was just like, put all of those into one record that was like, oh, that's Tyler the Creator. Like, that's the mission statement of what he's been showing for ages. Mm. And then it was like, well, where do you go from there? And then he went and did Eagle, which was like, oh, you've just gone so experimental. You've done such a mad experiment. And then just put a few voicemails from the comedian in between.
Yeah. I would love to be a fly on the wall when, you know, when artists like that deliver that album to the label. You know, they're sort of really excited about the new project that they're coming out with. And they go, okay, let's hear it. Okay, so the first track is just those guttural noises, is it? Okay, cool. All right, you know, that sounds... No, it's good. It's a different kind of direction. Just so bad.
It'd be weird, wouldn't it? Because you know all those stories of like when you, like famous people who've written scripts or whatever and then they've put a secret scene in it to see if the studio really noticed. So like the famous one of what is it? It's Ben Affleck and Matt Damon wrote Good Will Hunting and they put in this blowjob scene or whatever. To see if, Harvey Weinstein would notice. And obviously he did, there's a blowjob scene. But he said, the fact that it's not really
appropriate. They commissioned it.
Yeah, he said, not really appropriate. We'll make a separate video of the blowjob scene, just for me. But for the film, get rid of it for the film. We'll make that. And can I play that? That doesn't matter. Anyway, but they did that. It does feel like if you were like working at a label and Tyler comes in and plays you that album, are you not sort of thinking, this is fucking shit. Is he winding me up? Like you must, it must be so conflicted, especially someone like him. You know, he's a prankster.
Yeah.
So you're like,
Yeah, it's exactly the sort of thing he'd do. He'd go, okay, let's see if you actually are the visionary that's on board with what I do, like you say you are.
Yeah.
And he just plays him 60 minutes of him going to the toilet and just, oh, you like that? Oh, you think it's refreshing, do you? Think it's a cool new angle, do you?
I listened to Mick Jenkins off the back of this podcast, actually.
Oh, my God.
And I love that. I love
it. What did you think?
I love it. Yeah. I listened. It wasn't his latest album. It's the one before that.
Right.
And I thought, I sessioned that for ages.
Downtown on my hotline, it don't bleed much. Seen songs like Tubman, Young, Stephen Morris, I ain't seen much. Just a couple motherfuckers trying to rape the culture, tell the vultures I don't need lunch. It's like voice cold, gotta be in touch to communicate it to the people. Love heals all, best get your immunization at THC.
Yeah, great. Love Mick Jenkins. Open Mike Eagle I've been listening to lately. But nothing like, I don't think I've listened to any 2020 hip hop album. I can't think of one that's come out that I've been like, yes, finally.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff recently is like probably 2018 type stuff that I've just been going back to. I don't know, are there any good 2020 ones that I'm missing out on based on those sorts of things I've said?
Oh, based on those sort of things you said, maybe not. But R.A. the Rugged Man has brought out a new album, which is pretty good. Yeah. It's really good. So yeah, that would be my 2020 recommendation. If I was in charge of Mick Jenkins or his management, I definitely would have made a big effort for him to change his name.
Yeah, Mick Jenkins.
Because
sounds like a builder.
He sounds like what, sorry?
Like a builder or something.
Yeah, Mick Jenkins. Yeah. It makes me, it's like when they do a a documentary about a lower league football club and they introduce you to the groundsman. You know, this is Mick Jenkins, he keeps the pitch looking green.
Yeah.
That's all I've
He's a good rapper though.
He is a fantastic rapper. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I tell you what though, it's like when I was at school, because do you remember that rapper Mike Jones? Remember Mike Jones?
Yes.
And he would always, there's that track, I think it's with the Yin Yang Twins, and they go, it's Mike Jones. Right, now, my name is Reese Jones. You both know that. I had to change it, yeah. Various reasons. I'm in the witness protection program, but only a bit. I just had to change it very slightly. But my dad is called my dad is called Mike Jones. So you can imagine the fun that was had at school when that song from the Yin Yang Twins came out, where they all chant Mike Jones, especially as about a week before that song came out, my friends had come to my house and established that my dad answers the phone by going, Mike Jones. So the excitement on their faces when that song came out and I was next to them, like, they were just, people use that all the time. And it was quite fun. He bloody loved it. He thought it was hilarious. So yeah, that was brought up a lot. But Mike Jones, that's, again, it's another name that I can't ever associate with a rapper because it's my father.
Yeah, yeah, that must be weird. Because I do kind of like rappers using their full names. It's kind of cool, like Dave East, Mike Jones, Kendrick Lamar. But just Mick Jenkins.
Mick.
It's like, I don't know, it's a step beyond, isn't it?
Is in America, is Mick... Like, maybe you associate Mick differently to here. Mick has such a visceral image in Britain of what Mick means. It's like this bloke.
Yeah.
This meathead bloke, Mick. But I just can't... Yeah, in America, maybe Mick is cool. I don't know.
I would say it's so bad that I would... I mean, I know we mentioned him on the podcast, but I would hesitate to recommend... I just feel too embarrassed almost. If somebody goes, oh... What have you listened to recently? And you just go, oh, that new Mick Jenkins album. You go, well, you fucking...
Yeah.
What, did he just do your bathroom and he gave you a CD on his way out?
Who's your favourite rapper? James Phillips. Do you know James Phillips? He's really good. He goes hard.
We had... it was one of our American guests on the podcast. She said, can you recommend me any British rappers? And I said, oh, Dave. Dave's... Yeah, <that's... laughs> It just suddenly felt so embarrassing. Yeah, Dave. Yeah, just check out Dave. Have you been to any live hip hop?
Yeah, not much. I don't think it lends itself to the live experience as well as other stuff. To be honest, I'm not actually a massive fan of live music gigs anyway.
Oh, really? How come?
I'm not really into that atmosphere. And this is a wrong opinion, what I'm about to say. But for years, being the sort of stubborn person who takes a lyric booklet in to prove a girly fancy's wrong, I used to say sweeping statements like, live music is worse music. I mean, that I don't agree with that anymore, but I did used to be the sort of prick who says that. But I don't want to be in the crowd, jumping around in a big group, getting pushed about. I just, like, anytime I go to a gig,
what if you're just sort of sat back?
Yeah, I don't mind that. It feels weird to do that at, like, a hip hop thing. But, like, I went to see The Streets when they did the reunion tour, and I was like, I was just stood in the back corner. Me and my brother were just, like, stood in the back corner watching it and just, like, watching the fucking carnage of just, like, all these fucking maniacs. And then he gets pretty much naked and jumps into the crowd and throws beer everywhere. And I was just like, I just don't want to be involved. I want to watch this. I'll just go listen to the album. I really like it. But I tell you what, my first, just to hammer home the white home counties boy image, the first time I saw a hip hop artist live, it was Jay-Z opening for Coldplay.
Wow.
Yeah. At Wembley or the O2 or something. I went to see Coldplay do Viva La Vida.
That's quite a coup for them, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he was on the album. So... he was there to do that track, and then he just went out and did like 5 songs before them. And Girls Aloud went on before him, so you know it was a pretty eclectic. Yeah, it's pretty eclectic lineup. Yeah,
Fucking
the backstage.
Hell.
I was just trying to imagine the backstage sort of chat at that gig.
Yeah, it was fucking weird.
I'm just trying to think what Coldplay fans. I guess if you've gone to see Coldplay, Girls Aloud, you sort of think, okay, fairly sort of inoffensive. Jay-Z, I just think I don't. I guess it's exciting that it's a big name, isn't it? But apart from that, I don't know what the overlap would be.
I think that's where the mayor of hip hop might come into it. Is that it's like that? That might be why I think it's like, well, you're open for Coldplay, so you're not. You know.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are? But yeah, I think that's why. Like, because he's such an acceptable mainstream face, I think he probably was really exciting for everyone. But yeah, there's probably not crossover because he was on that album as well. It probably helped because everyone knew him from whatever Viva La Vida B-side
well,
he inexplicably rapped on.
I was a victim of the reverse favour because I went to see Jay-Z and Chris Martin was there doing some of the vocals and the piano and stuff. Beach Chair, he was doing that. And then they decided to take it up a notch even further than that by having Gwyneth Paltrow appear on stage to do some of the vocals. And it was so mental. It was such a mental decision for Jay-Z to think that this would be an exciting reveal for people that have come to watch Jay-Z in concert. The idea that we would suddenly go nuts for Gwyneth Paltrow being on, like, what the fuck are you doing? Brought on Nas earlier.
That's the difference, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
If you're at a Coldplay gig and Jay-Z appears, you're sort of like, what's going on here? If you're at a Jay-Z gig and Coldplay appear, you're like, fuck off. That's the difference in the fan bases, isn't it?
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
Well, look, Reece, thank you so much for joining us. We're almost out of time here. What are you up to at the moment?
Oh, you know,
lockdown.
Gambling and being sick. That's basically it at the minute, mate.
So is that what you want to plug?
Fuck all.
If we want to watch you throwing up, is there any way we can see that happen?
Yeah, I'm on Twitch every night at 8 p.m. Make sure you subscribe. No, of course not. But I'll plug this if you want. I don't normally like plugging stuff, but I do a podcast called Early Work about people's, like, comedians and writers and actors and stuff come on and read out the shit they wrote when they were kids or teenagers, like creative writing stuff. And there's actually been quite a lot of hip-hop on that podcast, if you want to call it that. So Tom Rosenthal, for example.
Yeah, I heard this one. This is great. This is great.
He came on and he made a load of raps for his county cricket team when he was about 15.
Wow.
And he actually recorded them. And then, like, it's because he couldn't play or something and he wanted to inspire them still. So he made this rap, like this Lose Yourself parody. And then it was played before the game. And I sort of clarified with him, when it's county cricket, doesn't that mean that it's like all different ages? So it's people in that team are both 12 and 50. And he was like, yeah. So that means there were 50-year-olds just inexplicable. Well, sorry, why are we listening? Why are we listening to this Cookham Dean Cricket Club rap? But so he did that. But what was great about that episode is that Tom insisted on not listening back to it before he did this show. So he hadn't heard it for 20 years. And then he listened and he was suddenly like being his own hype man and rapping along to the ends of these lines as he remembered the lyrics. So yeah, it was fucking mental. I also made a rap when I was younger that I played Tom on that episode, which was a parody of Juicy by Biggie Smalls, which, as you can imagine, is as excruciating as it sounds. And also Doc Brown came on, read out a load of old lyrics of stuff that he'd written that were fucking mental, insane. It was all about the A-Team. Everything he wrote was about the A-Team. It just shows his generation, I suppose.
Just this morning, my cousin from Australia, who'd come over to the UK just as I started doing stand-up, so 2010, right? And maybe end of 2009. And he videoed one of my sets in its entirety at this like gig that was attended by about four people in Brighton, and he sent it to me just this morning, and it is, I mean, it's one of the most unbearable.
Is it to be on his podcast?
No, I wasn't saying it for that, but I was just sort of saying that sort of thing where, like, because I remembered so little of the stuff, I didn't remember any of the stuff I was doing at that time. And so I kind of looked at it and I was like, I fucking hell, yeah, I did that. I did a joke about spinning a cat on the end of my cock. It was like, absolutely insane.
I mean, I need to see the set now. You're going to have to come on. I mean, to be honest, I don't actually, on the podcast, I don't really like accept early shit stand-up? Because obviously everyone's early.
No, I think I didn't.
You used to write raps, right? Or was it just freestyle stuff?
No, I have.
Did you write anything down?
I have got raps that I've written down here, and I'm pretty sure I've got like a mixtape of something we put out in Horsham a few years
Mate,
ago.
Mate, this is it. This is perfect. What the perfect blend of the two podcasts. That's what we need.
Ah, yeah, synergy. This is what they're all talking about, right?
Exactly.
Synergy. Great. Reese, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, man. If you haven't checked out Reese's stuff, he's not only very funny when he's gigging, which he hates, but he's also very funny on Twitter, and his podcast is great, so make sure you check it out. And also, you're on like Mock the Week every week, right? It feels like you're on it a lot, aren't you?
Yeah,
when they're making it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the filming dates we were supposed to do in the summer have just been moved, so who knows? But when it's on,
okay.
Yeah, I'm on that a fair bit, you know. It's good to have some new news to talk about, I suppose. We're talking about fucking Brexit for years.
Reese, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.